Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 65. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, even though I made a goof while editing at the beginning of the show. So if you re-download it, it's all good now. I'm sorry about that. I was a little distracted because, I had a daughter, so I'm a little kind of scatterbrained. So because of that, we're going to do a mini episode today covering just the most important news. As always, I'm Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hello, or I'm a Danya-shaped puddle.
I know, it's like you're melting there, right there?
Yeah.
If you want to get involved in the conversation, you guys can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. You can also leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. We've also launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some amazing perks include joining us in our Discord chat, recording studio, movie nights, After Dark episodes, as well as the opportunity to get free t-shirts and buttons from that. So I think it's time for the news, Danya.
It is, yes.
This first article I want to talk about, and the first kind of thing I want to go after, this is something I posted on Twitter, and it got, I don't even know how many retweets and comments from it, and likes, and just everything about it, was Star Wars 9 director Colin Trevorrow truly felt Rey's importance after his daughter saw Wonder Woman. Now, direct quotes from him: "We took my daughter, who's 4, to see Wonder Woman. My wife and I and my son, we all loved it. It's a great movie, but something else happened with her. She had a very profound reaction to it. We thought it was a little long for her, and we weren't sure if she was going to be a part of this, but she came out and was like, I want to watch that every day, and I'm Wonder Woman now. It was pretty stunning to see what happened. It's important, that movie. It really is. Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, and Princess Leia were all characters that we were able to identify with in various ways, and especially with the character of Rey and what she means to young girls right now, and the challenges that she's up against. It's extremely critical that I understand what actual children are feeling about these stories, and we're telling them, and I think it's important that I have kids, and if filmmakers don't have kids, they should go talk to them because they don't see things the same way that we did when we were kids." So this article goes into, you know, obviously Colin Trevorrow is director of Star Wars Episode 9, and he never really felt how important Rey's character was on young girls until his daughter saw Wonder Woman. Danya, what do you think about this?
Yeah, see, now that concerns me. And the reason that it concerns me is it's the same attitude that so many filmmakers go into big franchise films with. It's that these characters mean so much to so many people, but because it's out of the scope of your understanding, you either just don't realize the importance or don't care to realize the importance until it personally affects you. And the thing is that to be a good filmmaker, especially for something as huge as Star Wars, you can't be blinkered by your own personal experiences, because it's something that is far bigger than you are. And even just as a filmmaker in general, to a certain extent, you have a responsibility to understand what you're putting out there. And not everything that you're going to be creating and not everything that you're hired to create is going to be all about your centralized personal experience. If you are not constantly going out and asking people for what they think or how this affects them, or even for just their input in general, particularly when something is central to women or women being in story, if you are not speaking to women when you are in charge of a film that has a central lead female character you have not been able to identify with, then what the hell are you even doing running this project? And it's right, don't get me wrong, it's great that he's come around and realized now that this is an important thing and Rey is an important character. And I'm not taking away from incredible impact that Wonder Woman has had on girls, on women, and just in general with opening up possibilities, the potential for female filmmakers and directors and writers and actresses leading big blockbuster franchise films in their own right. But the fact that it took something like that for him to realize the importance of what Rey stands for, he should have already realized her importance way before then. Like, if he's that blinkered, that blind to it, when there are huge campaigns about her being left out of merchandise, about her being, like, relegated to being a Mary Sue and that sort of thing, so much is being written and being put out there, there have been so many discussions, but if he didn't bother to go out and look beyond his own personal experiences, why the hell was he hired first? Especially when we know how important Rey is to this trilogy. Why? Why was he the right person if he didn't, for this movie, demonstrate an understanding about that character, the trajectory of the film, and how important she was going to continue to be to the franchise? Why him?
Now I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
Because you always play devil's advocate.
I always have to. So assuming positive intent, maybe he did have an idea, but it wasn't to this profound level. Because, you know, he mentions that, you know, he didn't think his daughter would even have a reaction to Wonder Woman because it might have been too long for her. She's 4 years old. You know, obviously, I have a daughter. I'm all about this. But at the same time, it's one of those things where it was a very profound reaction she had to it, and he was surprised by it. Not saying that he didn't think it was, thing. You know, he did say, but hold on. Because of maybe such a young age, you know, like that, okay. So maybe you think seven and eight year olds would respond, but a 4 year old, he was amazed at this. Okay. Now at the same time, he recognized that Han Solo, Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker were all characters that they were able to identify. And he did realize that Rey, you know, especially the views the character of Rey with what he means to young girls. I think some of it might have been misconstrued of how much of an impact the character of Rey is even on younger girls. Now, I'm not saying on girls in general, but I'm talking about younger girls, like age of four of his daughter. And I think he even tells filmmakers that you have to talk to kids because he had this realization. At the same time, I think Kathleen Kennedy, before we get to our next art, you know, before we talk about our next article, I think Kathleen Kennedy also, you know, knew how important Rey is as a character, you know, versus unlike someone like Rian Johnson, who's gone on the record saying he's had a lot more free reign with the story of episode 8, you know, than, you know, Colin Trevorrow will with episode 9. Like, you know, he was, as you know, unfortunately with the passing of Carrie Fisher, Carrie was supposed to be a central part of episode 9. That was supposed to be her episode, right? Her kind of being the central point. Obviously, with her passing away, they had to rework the story. This is not something that Colin did on his own or with just his writers. You know, he went to Lucasfilm, Kathleen Kennedy, all the, you know, everyone there to help make sure the story is crafted in a way that is true to the voice of these characters. Regardless of what a director's vision is or what they should have, you know, the film is the director's vision. So they can have any specific vision, and I think he would have been true to the character of Rey. Maybe not have seen the importance of it, but just because he doesn't see the importance of it doesn't mean he can't be true to the vision of the character and still portray her correctly. Plus, you also have to remember that the characters are not just done by the director, they're also done by the actors. And I think Daisy Ridley would have definitely brought out the character the way that we expect the character to be. I think, you know, on such a big film, a franchise film, I think one of the reasons why Colin Trevorrow was picked was because he was able to wrangle something like Jurassic World, which was another big tentpole film. Again, regardless of my opinions of that film or his most recent film, The Book of Henry, you know, I think they may have chosen the right director purely because they wanted to give, you know, they wanted to have a different voice for each film. This one, I think he is one of those things where I'm excited to see what he comes up with, and I don't think Kathleen Kennedy would let it get too far off track, just especially with what we'll talk about in a second. But I think, you know, I think I'm glad he's had this realization. I think I'm happy with this article because even though I'm a little disappointed that he didn't have this insight beforehand, the fact that he's gained that insight and he's garnished the information about, like, hey, I need to talk to kids. I need to have this perspective, especially on these type of franchises where, you know, Star Wars means so much to so many people. I think the fact that he even has that and is willing to admit that is the right step. You know, if this article never came out and he never admitted this, no one would be saying this about him. But at the same time, the fact that he's willing to go that far and be like, I have this, like, again, you know, they're just looking at starting principal photography on this guy, right? So I'm okay. I'm okay with it. And the fact that he's gone this far and admitted to this and has someone like his daughter who he has seen the profound reaction of Wonder Woman, which is an amazing film, by the way. And I think you would agree with me on that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes. Yeah. I mean, this is not the place for me to discuss.
So it's just, I know. I know. But my point is the fact that he even has that perspective and is willing to, you know, talk about it openly, even if it, you know, even if it's not right, you know, if it wasn't from the start, but at least he's got there. Does that make sense? Like, and I think, I mean, he's okay
to direct it. To an extent. I mean, I don't rate him as a director at all. Like, I don't think that of any of the films that I've seen by him, I haven't liked one yet. So I feel like it's very difficult for me because I'm coming from an entirely different perspective. You are comfortable with the turnaround that you've seen in him. I don't feel that so far I've seen any kind of evidence in the way that he treats his female characters to suggest that we're going to see any huge impact in how Rey is portrayed from his point of view. Now, Daisy may do incredible stuff with what she's given, but it's so much more than just what material she is forming. It is also about, like, the framing of the shots and how it's all put together.
Well, but you gotta remember, framing the shots is gonna be his cinematographer. It's not gonna be him
so
much.
Yeah, but to, like, the direction that they're getting, he has a huge impact.
He does, on the way he, and the way they deliver it, the pacing, and, like, I get it. Like, the director does have a lot of impact on the pacing, the tone, and all those things. But it's also, you know, I would say, like, as a director, even if, you know, as a director for this type of film, especially episode 9, if it was episode 8 or episode 7, I would be concerned. Like, I would be 100% concerned. But with episode 9, by the third film in the trilogy, short of them having Ewoks, I'm not really that concerned, because the fact that he's admitted to this, he's recognized it, any good director, and regardless if you think he's a good director, he's going to be a good enough director to at least listen to his characters who have been in this character for much more than him. They have more experience in these roles than him. So they're going to, you know, they're going to say, hey, I feel like maybe can I do it a different way? Unlike George Lucas, who is all a one take and done type thing, which it took till Revenge of the Sith for some of the actors who were in it to kind of realize that they have to kind of pre-rehearse and figure out how they want to get it across. Like, again, the actor said, you know, Natalie Portman and Ewan McGregor said, we had to figure out how we wanted to deliver it because George was all about doing it once and we were done. So we had to make sure we delivered it the way we thought the characters would do it the first time, not the second or third time, or variations of it. So I feel like he'll be okay because it's the third film in this trilogy, and you'll have, you know, people like John Boyega, you know, Daisy Ridley, all of them coming back who have embraced these characters for, you know, since 2014, you know, and so I feel like he'll be a good director in that sense. When it comes to, like, shots and stuff like that, you know, he will be responsible for pacing and different things like that. But I will tell you, like, regardless of how he treated specific characters in past, I will say Jurassic World had good pacing for a film. It wasn't lackluster. It wasn't a great film by any means. I think the best shot was...
Low average.
Well, no, if you look at it from a specific pacing or an editing standpoint, which again falls down to his editor, the, you know, it didn't drag on like, say, Jurassic Park 3, which, you know, Jurassic Park 3 was, you know, it was hard to watch.
Personally, I put it on par with Jurassic Park 3.
You know, I would say that too. It's probably on Jurassic
Park 3. But that's how much I didn't like it.
No, it's probably on par with Jurassic Park 3. You know, it's not a great film. It's not the first one. It's not the second one. Which, again, those are obviously directed by Spielberg, who's got a plethora of kind of experience with it. But, you know, I think he'll be okay. But again, that's my perspective coming from, Devil's Advocate, assuming positive intent. I want to assume the best of him. And I also put trust and faith into someone like Kathleen Kennedy, head of Lucasfilm, who is all about women's rights and wants to make sure that the films are done correctly. So if I don't have faith in him, I have faith in Kathleen Kennedy for doing the right choice. Does that make sense?
And I do to an extent as well, but Kathleen Kennedy also, how do I put this without sounding like ass? Kathleen Kennedy does believe in pushing the women in the franchise. She does believe in really putting them at the forefront, and she really does believe in powerful world, powerful women, strong female character. But, and here's the big but, her brand of feminism, if you want to put a label on it, because it is feminism, is very white. Like, it's incredibly white. And for a subset of the audience, that's absolutely fine. But we've got to remember that we have additional characters coming in this film where, they are people of color. So you've got Kelly Marie Tran, who's playing Rose, who is going to a significant role in this next film, in The Last Jedi. Now, Kathleen Kennedy may very well champion Rey, but a lot of reports were that Rose, the character that eventually went to Kelly Marie Tran, was originally championed by Kathleen Kennedy to be a different white brunette character. Rian Johnson is the one who pushed hard for it to be Kelly Marie Tran.
Well, and I think, and here's the thing is, you have to remember there's other things that they have to look at when making a decision for a movie, a franchise of this size.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Now I'm not justifying anything, and I'm very happy with Kelly Marie Tran as her choice for Rose, and I love that Rose has a sister, and we're ecstatic about it. But at the same time, you have to remember, there is a level of, business that goes into it. So at the same time, I kind of can see where during that early production stage, this idea of Rose makes sense, and it might be a white brunette, which is the same as Princess Leia and Padme Amidala and Rey and every other female character that we've seen in Star Wars, except maybe Ahsoka, who's green skin, to Gruda instead. So it's one of those things where it definitely is, that might have just been what was instantly in their mind. I wouldn't blame her, but the fact that she was open and willing to go with a different character and a different ethnicity and, a different way with it, I think that speaks to her character.
It took significant argument on Rian Johnson's side,
Here's the thing: when someone says significant, does that mean like? Here's the thing: is Kelly Marie Tran before this was a completely unknown stepping into a franchise. Now, when you start someone off like at the beginning of a franchise, like that's probably a little bit easier. But stepping them into an existing world, like look at Lando Calrissian, all right? He was a brand new character of color, when, Empire Strikes Back came out, right?
Yeah.
At the same time, Billy Dee Williams was not an unknown. Like, he was not an unknown actor like Mark Hamill was at the time. Does that make sense? Like, so,
yeah,
Kelly Marie Tran being an unknown at the time, there is a financial thing to think about in it,
but
coming from Kathleen Kennedy.
There absolutely is not. That's the thing. Because Star Wars is an established franchise. You slap the name Star Wars on anything, there are going to be butts in those seats, regardless of whether Kelly Marie Tran was in this movie or not.
You're right, but that's the problem.
It's the same as the Marvel movies. It's the same as the Marvel movies.
But that's the thing, is you have to understand, like, yes, you're right. You can slap Star Wars on anything, even if it's good or bad, and it will make money. Will it make the record-breaking money that Force Awakens did? Probably not. At the same time, though, you have to remember, Kathleen Kennedy has been entrusted with this, and this is their new franchise that they're looking at for long term. So she has to protect it. And I get it. So like I said, I'm going to assume positive intent on this, both for, you know, Kathleen Kennedy and Colin Trevorrow, and say, we will see how it turns out, but I'm not really worried myself. The fact that Colin even admitted to it and it's like, and now has this awesome view of how important a character like Rey is, not that he, you know, we don't even know if Kelly Marie Tran's character Rose makes it past The Last Jedi. You know, again, they're very careful.
That would be a terrible statement to make on behalf of the film, but sure, okay.
well, but you got to remember, like, saying something like Rey, it's kind of assumed that Rey will make it through to the third film. You know, like, it's kind of assumed there. You know, so I think the fact that he can talk about Rey, like, again, you have to remember, they're surrounded by so many NDAs and everything. So, again, I'm assuming a positive intent, Danya. I like to think the best of people.
I know you do, but also I am a woman that engages in media, and therefore of the positive intent in the world means jack crap when the evidence is that nothing significant is changing or has changed. So you can have positive intent out the wazoo, but until we actually see significant effective change coming, then to me it's empty words. Unless I see when episode 9 comes around that Colin Trevorrow really has gone out of his way and figured out how to center Rey or even any female story in episode 9 and do it in a very profound and positive way, then I'm just going to treat this as lip service.
Okay, I'll take that, but we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. Like I said, I'm going to assume positive intent. We'll take a look when episode 9 comes around. We have a couple years off, so. But yeah, so that was it. The only reason I brought this article up is because we talked about it this week on Twitter, and we had a lot of comments about it. And we'll see what happens. Like I said, episode 9 is still a ways off. We still have to get through episode 8 and the Han Solo film, which leads us to our next bit of news. So we have two articles I want to talk about. The first one is specifically, the Han Solo film has lost its directors. To quote both Kathleen Kennedy and Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, Phil Lord and Christopher Miller are talented filmmakers who have assembled an incredible cast and crew, but it's become clear that we had different creative visions on this film, and we've decided to part ways. A new director will be announced soon. That's from Kathleen Kennedy, president of Lucasfilm, and she said this on Tuesday. So we're recording on Wednesday, so that was just yesterday. And then this is a statement from Lord and Miller. Unfortunately, our vision and processes weren't aligned when we with our partners on this project. We normally aren't fans of the phrase creative differences, but for once this cliche is true. We are really proud of the amazing and world-class work of our cast and crew. So, you know, this came out Tuesday talking about how they've been removed because of creative differences. And this is on StarWars.com, you know, Hollywood Reporter. Every news article has pulled this up. You know, and I think our initial reaction is like, oh my God, really? Like, I had optimism about the Han Solo film, you know, because I liked it called Big Red Solo Cup as a film. And I'm like, I'm going to see what happens. Plus, Donald Glover is like my boy. And I got Lando. Like, honestly, if I was to take over directorial, you know, duties of this, I may pivot the film and not be a Han Solo film, become a Lando film. Just saying, wouldn't it be a bad thing? So, Donnie, what do you think about this before we get to the next part of that's come out of this kind of drama, if you will, of Star Wars? What do you think about them being removed? Like, they're in the middle of filming. Like, they're, like, halfway through production.
I mean, genuinely concerned. Because, honestly, I'm not as confident in this film anyway, and I still don't see it as entirely necessary. But the fact that they're ousting the directors mid-film, or significantly through the film, is not any way, like, it's not filling me with any sort of confidence in the film at all, or the direction it's going in, or just the whole thing moving forward at all. I've never been sold on this at all. And everyone knows, if you've been listening to this podcast over the last God knows how many months, you know that I've not been, I'm not confident in this film at all. I don't see it as necessary. I still think it was, for a spin-off film, it's just redundant. So the fact that it's kind of slowly imploding, it's kind of like, in some ways, it's like this weird kind of Schadenfreude of like, oh god, it's kind of one of those moments where I'm like, I really don't want to see Star Wars fail, but if this was the one that kind of imploded, I wouldn't care that much.
Okay. All right. So okay, before we get to the next bit of news that's come out today, and I'm sure we'll get more and more. So, you know, here's the thing. Phil Lord, Chris Miller, you know, they've done some good films, and I will say I like half, you know, part of what their directorial work is. You know, they've done four major films, if you will, that have been released. You know, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, 21 Jump Street, The Lego Movie, and 22 Jump Street. I will say they're animated films, The Lego Movie and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. I absolutely love both of them. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, I didn't think I would like, but I think it was awesome, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. Lego Movie, come on, everything is awesome. How can you not love that? Maybe that's just me. But both their live-action films, I've seen 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street, and I didn't like it at all. Like, I watched it when I had, you know, tonsillectomy and I was out and I can literally sit there and do nothing with, you know, but watch movies. So, you know, I enjoyed their animated films, live action, not so much. And then this leads us right into what we just found out today, released by the Hollywood Reporter. But it says why the Han Solo film directors were fired. So it does look like they were fired, and it's actually really interesting that they were actually fired, because apparently it blindsided both the directors, so much so that they have moved their family. I'm trying to find the exact quote, but they had moved their family to London while they were working. So like, obviously that was during pre-production and everything. The family's living there, they're living there, and it comes down to creative differences. So the Han Solo film was written by Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote Empire Strikes Back. And when it comes down to creative differences, I'm trying to find the exact quote, but it really comes down to Kasdan saying something along the lines of, here's his quote, "People need to understand that Han Solo is not a comedic personality. He's sarcastic and selfish." And when it comes down to someone who wrote Han Solo previously and kind of helped define it, I would say everyone would say probably some of the most popular lines and a defining moment of Han Solo's character is in Empire and Return of the Jedi, when you see that he does have a relationship with Princess Leia, and how he goes about that. Saying something as cliche as "I know" instead of "I love you" back. Those are things that make Han Solo Han. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean,
so
not a nice character.
No, he's not a nice character. He's a scoundrel. He's sarcastic and selfish. You know, he is glorified by a lot of people. And I'm okay with that, because I love Han Solo, but I also love his roguishness and everything. But at the end, he does come back to help out with the Death Star on Chewie's persistence. He does help save the princess from Echo Bay. You know, he does do good things, but he is selfish in a lot of ways. And he is sarcastic and, you know, never tell me, you know, all those things. He's very cocky, if you will. So what it comes down to, though, is it sounds like a lot of the tension was between Kasdan, the writers of the film, who Lawrence wrote this with his son also, John, and the directors. And apparently, this was there from the very beginning. And I'm trying to find their quote from Phil Lord and Miller. There it is. So basically, they relocate to London with their families for pre-production and production of the movie. They said they were blindsided by the firing, which they learned about on Monday, according to one source. The production had gone on a short hiatus to review what had been shot to clear the air. And then they go on to say that it really comes down to they knew there was tension from the beginning, but they thought they would work through it during production. So from the get-go, Phil Lord and Chris Miller had these, you know, their own sense of humor that they wanted to bring to the film, their own things that they wanted to, you know, obviously they're the directors, they wanted to have the actors play things in a certain way, but it was very off script. You know, they wanted to ad-lib stuff, whereas Kasdan was like, no, I need you to these are things that Han would say, and this is how it needs to be said. Now, like the, how it's delivered, you know, with an inflection here and there, that's up to the director. But the, it sounds like there was just tension between the writer and Kathleen and the directors, which it doesn't surprise me that Kathleen Kennedy would side with Lawrence Kasdan, who's been a long time, you know, they've worked together for 20 years over these two new directors. What do you think about this? The fact that they were fired?
Again, concerning, because a lot of the groundwork's probably already there. So if they go into reshoots now, how significantly are they going to have to change it? From, like, if it's not striking the right tone, if it's not, if they haven't been getting what they wanted out of the film, then how much money is going to have to go back into fixing this? Can they fix it without basically starting over?
So it's come down to, it's expected that a new director will take the next several weeks with production shut down to go over what Lord and Miller have shot, re-edit what they've filmed, and go from there, according to one source. So it's probably they're going to sit there with their script supervisor, go through and say, like, we can use this, we can't use this, we can use this, we can't use this, like every scene that's been shot. They're going to come up with a new production schedule and reshoot from there. So it sounds like, you know, the, with production shut down right now for a couple weeks, a hiatus, so everyone to cool down, whoever the new director is, which is expected to happen soon, we'll just find out. Like, I'm sure they'll reuse some of it. I'd be surprised if they reshoot everything. But, you know, who knows? Like, as action sequence, I don't know if there's any action sequence that have been shot that would need to be redone. But it sounds more like it's going to be dialogue. Now, some names that have emerged is Ron Howard, who I am a huge fan of his directing style. He's emerged as a possible source. Joe Johnston has also come up, and I like his earlier work, as well as Kasdan himself, who directed things like The Big Chill and Silverado. So there's quite a few names in the pool for replacing them. But it is definitely something that is not going to be very smooth. And with this, I don't know if this is going to be a good thing or a bad thing, but I think, I'm okay with it being okay. I will say it looks like Hollywood Reporter did say that they talked that this is not the first time Disney's done this. During Rogue One, they brought in Tony Gilroy to rewrite and direct substantial reshoots of Rogue One. Now, those reshoots were not significant after the fact that we found out it was the ending that was simply moving the timeline of going from one building to another on Scarif. And Gareth was not available because he was dealing with, you know, editing everything at the time, you know, with his editors. So they had Tony Gilroy reshoot it and rewrite some of those things. And I think, you know, I think a pacing thing made sense. Like, I don't think there was any compromise in Rogue One with the pacing of it all being in one building versus going from one to the other and it's just drawing the film out too long, especially when you look at pacing and editing. It's like, hey, this is just too slow. Like, would you agree on that, at least with Rogue One?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't, you know, we'll see what happens with this, but, you know, it is interesting to see that, obviously with the press release and everything, that they parted ways because they created differences. I am a little surprised that Disney and Lucasfilm just was like, nope, giving them the boot. But it also shows true to why, you know, the when it comes to a business stand, you mentioned like, oh, they just stick Star Wars on anything and it's going to do well. You know, they're making sure that their brand, Star Wars, Han Solo, are protected, even taking away someone who they thought would, I don't want to say fall in line, but kind of, you know, bring their unique style of directing to something, you know, that was there, but obviously there was problems with it, you know? So I'm okay with it. Like, I'm a little worried. I just hope Donald Glover comes off being amazing and there'll be a Lando spinoff, because that's what I really want.
Yeah, I mean, a Lando film just in general would have been far more interesting to me, or something that
it would be
centered entirely around Lando. And that's not to say that Han could have featured in it, but I don't feel like Han's story is one that we need. But that, again, that's completely separate to the idea of fired. But
yeah. They can always just have Donald Glover direct it. I'm not saying he hasn't done it before. Great Gambino. He can do it. Anyway, let's move on to the next bit of news. So this next bit of news is pretty interesting. Way back in 2012, Disney and Netflix signed an exclusive agreement starting in 2016. Netflix has the right to start streaming Disney films, including those from Pixar, Marvel, and Lucasfilm. So, in the same window, they'd be hitting television. So Netflix has announced Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, will begin streaming on Netflix July 2017. This is huge. Now, I will tell you this. I obviously own Rogue One. I think you do too, Danya. We all, you know, we do a Star Wars podcast. We've seen Rogue One many times. But I do think it's kind of cool that this type of film, you know, a fairly recent film, is coming to streaming services. As, you know, we haven't had the Star Wars films on a streaming service before.
In the United States or...
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah, in the United States or the UK. Because Canada, they had Force Awakens.
And I think in the Netherlands, they have all of them. And in Denmark, I believe that they have a few of them. Not all, but I think maybe the Force Awakens they have. So... This is specifically
for the US.
United States. Yeah.
Yeah. So and it's interesting because you have to remember, in the US, the first six films are tied to 20th Century Fox. So Netflix would have to make a deal with them specifically for distribution and streaming rights. But, you know, it is one of those things where, and one of our listeners here just said, it wouldn't be the first movie I just queued up on Netflix because I was too lazy to get up and put the disc in the player. But, you know, it is nice to be able to have, you know, one of these Star Wars films on streaming services, which may or may not mean this gets moved up to one of our movie nights sooner rather than later, because then everyone can have it on Netflix and start watching it at the same time. You know, who knows? But I think that's just a kind of a cool thing that they have. That they've announced, you know, something with Netflix. I'm excited for it. And the last bit of news that we're going to talk about today, again, this is a mini episode, is you can actually read an exclusive excerpt from the new Inferno Squad novel. And I will tell you, I'm actually really surprised at the amount of publicity this book is getting. You know, really not many other Star Wars novels recently have gotten this much publicity before the book came out. Now, I don't know if this is a combination of Lucasfilm or Del Rey pushing it, or if it is an EA thing because of the tie-in with Battlefront 2. But Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad is getting a huge amount of publicity. USA Today actually is the one that released the exclusive excerpt from the book, which I won't talk about here because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But what do you think about this, Sonia? Just this amount of attention that this book is receiving.
What, just in general? I mean, a lot of the books are getting...
I don't know. I feel like this one's getting more than other books. Think about, like, Lost Stars. Like, I don't think, like, Lost Stars got this much of a media push. I feel like, you know, some of the books have gotten some. But this one, I feel like it's just... Obviously, it might be because of the trailer from the gameplay and everything that's tied to the book. So maybe all the video game networks are covering it also, and that might be what it is. But I will say that this book has been written by Christy Golden, who has written four other Star Wars books, three which are part of Legends, and the Fate of the Jedi series, which I think is one of my favorite series in the Legends series. And she also wrote Dark Disciple, which follows a story arc of... Asajj Ventress, which was never explored in the Clone Wars series. So that is the Dark Disciple is a canon novel done by Christy Golden. So I will say, out of all the Star Wars authors, I am excited for this book because, one, I like Christy Golden as an author. And this is going to explore kind of makings of the First Order. So I'm kind of excited for this. What do you think, Danya?
I mean, yeah, I'm excited about it. I think we've spoken a little bit about just Inferno Squad in general. And how it's quite interesting, just from the perspective of, like, how we're going to be looking at it, what point of view that we're getting, and that sort of thing. Again, I'm in novel form, I find it easier to read from Empire, like, the that sort of standpoint, the beginnings of like the First Order, the Empire, or all of the Empire, and that's anyone that's not anyone that's on that side, I find it easier to read novels about rather than, like, for example, when we get Battlefront stuff, like, I'm not so enthused about that because it's harder to read it from, like, an objective... You can read from an objective standpoint with Inferno Squad, but when you're forced to
play
through their ideals, yeah, that's where I have a difficulty.
The separation but, harder. Yeah, yeah, you know... It, you know, when it comes to it, like, I'm excited for the, obviously, the Phasma book that's coming out soon. We'll finally learn how she got out of the trash compactor. But this one, you know, the Inferno Squad, you get a sneak peek if you go to USA Today. I will say the segment is very short, but it's very good. I'm kind of just excited to see this book come out. It comes out in the fall. So, leading up to all the books that are coming out in the fall, specifically for the new books that are leading right before... Episode 8 comes out, The Last Jedi. Donnie, is there any other news that we skipped over today for this week? I know there's been a lot of news, but nothing specific for The Last Jedi or any of the other stuff that's coming up.
Right. Yeah. No, there wasn't. I guess the only other thing to say is, like, we don't expect us to comment on the autopsy results regarding Carrie Fisher's death. We will not be talking about it. We have done our tributes to her legacy and her life, and that is where it ends, and that is where we will continue to stay. We will not be discussing or going over the autopsy results, because in actuality, it doesn't really matter how she died. It matters how she lived her life. So...
I'll agree with you on that 100%. So thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
And I'm Danya.
May the Force be with you.
And also with you.